Women are changing hockey, and we're here to talk about it. This is Chal Chit Chat, and I'm your host, Les Hood. Today's episode is a fantastic resource for individuals who are looking to kind of grow in the hockey industry and truly take it for what it is, which is a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of freelancing. There are so many individuals in the hockey industry that do a lot of different jobs that come together to build up a really cool portfolio of full-time work for them. While freelancing does come with so much flexibility and opportunity and excitement, it also comes with its own challenges of managing different deadlines, having different workplace cultures to adjust to, and really just learning how to advocate for yourself. Joining me today is Sarah Sivian, who is a journalist who has transitioned from full-time work in hockey to more of a freelancing model and has found a lot of success in that area. Sarah is a contributor to Bleacher Report, her own Substack, to BetRivers, and has a really prominent following in the hockey industry. So she's going to join me today, and we are going to talk about what insights she can provide for individuals who are looking to manage that freelancing industry here in hockey and the opportunities that exist. I am so glad that you're here for episode 5 with Sarah Sivian. So without further ado, let's talk about how to navigate freelancing in hockey. Welcome in to Chal Chit Chat, Sarah. I'm so psyched to have you today. How are you doing? Welcome to episode number 5.
Oh, I'm good. I'm so happy to be here, and I love that you're doing this. What a cool concept.
Oh, thank you so much. I have been having so much fun recording these episodes. We're kind of right at the midpoint of the season here in episode 5, pardon me, that we're talking in today. So I'm really excited for all the episodes that are yet to come and all that we've talked about today. Tried to get a really diverse group of people in to talk about all kinds of different concepts about women in hockey, navigating the hockey industry, and all those fun things. Today, we are talking a little bit about freelancing. So before we get started, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and kind of what your background in the hockey industry has been so far?
Yeah, my name is Sarah. I went to Penn State. I watched the club team go to Division I there and fell in love with writing about them and realized I could do that for a career and kind of tried my best at doing that. Got my first big gig with The Athletic, writing about the Hurricanes for 5 years. We'll get into this more, but like brief Spark Notes version. Wanted to go home to Boston, so decided, all right, I'm going to freelance a little bit and figure out what the next steps in my career are, and I've really worked it all out ever since. Now I cover the whole league for Bleacher Report. I have the Too Many Men podcast, and I started my own Substack at the beginning of this year, and that's been really awesome.
Awesome. I love that. Have you always been a hockey fan, or was that something that kind of, as like you mentioned, the team at Penn State was something that made you fall in love with writing about it, but is that also how you fell in love with hockey, or are you just like a lifelong Boston sports fan, hockey, Bruins, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, definitely a lifelong Boston sports fan, and hockey was always my favorite other than lacrosse. I played it growing up. You know, in Boston, it's pretty popular, so it's been really cool to kind of be a part of it, but always loved the hockey community and loved skating and playing and watching the sport. It's always the most entertaining sport to watch, I've thought.
Oh, I could not agree more. I think you're preaching to the choir on that one, and I am not a Boston sports fan, so I feel like I have a level of bitterness towards you and all of the success that you've been able to see, and especially in this century. My gosh, there's just they can't stop winning, but it makes for some fun content for sure. And I'm sure you've learned how to play the villain pretty well with being from Boston. I love to see it. But I want to talk a little bit about freelancing today. I think that's, you know, why we're having this conversation, and you are the person I wanted to come talk about it, because actually you reached out to me a while back. I remember I got laid off from a freelancing gig when I was working in hockey, and it was a really, really hard time for me, and you were really kind support to me, and you talked about how, you know, you've been managing this sort of landscape for a really long time, and you have all kinds of different tips, tricks, advice, and all those sorts of things. So I wanted to bring you on today to chat about that sort of thing. But why don't you kind of start by just sort of giving us the lay of the land of what freelancing in sports is? Because I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people, when they think about the careers that they're going to have in their life, they think that, you know, the goal is to end up in one place where you work your 40 hours a week, 9 to 5, and that's your one gig, that's your thing. But there are so many other avenues that you can go down in life, especially in sports. So why don't you give us a little bit of the scope of what freelancing really is, especially in hockey?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I feel like it's not talked about enough in journalism school, but my favorite journalism professor always says it's just because I didn't go to class, like he talked about it. But I do think it's like, your goal can change in life, and your goal has to change and ever evolve if you're going to be in sports journalism, doing writing especially, because you just see layoffs and you see everything happen. You have to be able to be adaptable. And fortunately, I was never laid off, but I just wanted to go a different direction and see what would happen if I was just kind of figuring it out on the way. Because I didn't, the beauty of freelancing, which is also kind of the danger and the hard work of it, is that you can explore all these different avenues. I was really at a crossroads where I didn't want to cover one team in one place anymore. I wanted to, first of all, move back home to Boston and be with my family. Like in sports, kind of the a really big con to having the stable career, like the stable career, because you're prone to getting laid off if you have a full-time job, which sucks. But it's like the con to that is you have to move and you have to be in a different place with like without your family and friends, without maybe where you want to end up in life. So I just, after the pandemic, kind of reprioritized, like I don't want my parents to get sick without me. I don't want to, and maybe I'll move again in life, but I really had been so long without my family and friends. My niece was born. I made that decision to have a more flexible schedule and do my own thing, but that means doing multiple streams of things to be able to survive. So Bleacher Report took me in, and that's been awesome. Like that, in a world where stability of income cannot always be on point, you might not get paid on time, you might get kind of screwed over with articles, like money per articles. Bleacher Report is not like that at all. You get, for me, it's 2 articles a week and it's a really, really fair income and they never miss a payment or anything. So I've really appreciated them. They encouraged me to take on other projects. Like I've started doing, obviously I always do Too Many Men, but that's kind of a passion project where we aren't making money off it anymore. We chose to do it so we can talk about kind of whatever we want. Then I'm doing something called the Toronto Sports Rush now, which is on Bet Rivers. And that's been pretty cool because it's, I'm hosting, I've never been a host. So I've got to interview Pierre Maguire, Steve Dangle, all these people in the Leafs atmosphere, whatever it is about the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I've never really been kind of an official person doing something like that. So that's been an interesting stream of income. And then of course, this year I really wanted to branch out and do my own newsletter, which is called The Civ Report, and it's once a week. So it's on Substack, and I highly recommend that to any freelancer with any type of following. It's just kind of, you have the freedom freelancing to try new things, but it's also, you have to try new things if you want to stay afloat and kind of realize your potential.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's a really interesting portfolio of things. And I think that's the beauty of it. They're all kind of different. They center in hockey, they're all about hockey, but they have their own different angles that you're able to kind of tackle and try. How did you decide that this was something that you wanted to do? I know you mentioned that moving home was a priority for you, but going from having that one main job and then obviously maybe some projects on the side, I don't think anyone who works in hockey is ever just doing one thing, but it can be scary to go from one big main thing to a bunch of different kind of avenues and stuff like that. How did you kind of make that decision, and what was kind of the main draw for doing all those different things?
Yeah, it's so funny because I mean, if you ask twitter.com, they say I got fired for being a liberal. That's not true. I have never once got fired.
Let's set the record straight. Sarah did not get fired for being a liberal.
it's, I didn't get fired, like me screaming from the rooftop. Like, I chose this. I know, like, people try to dunk on me, like, be correct. Anyway, I kind of wanted to try to cover the entire league and see because I've always had this following. I had the most, like, growth of following in the athletic history when it comes to Twitter or whatever. So it's like, what do you do with that? You don't, sometimes it's like, if you don't want to cover one team, and I have like a kind of unique voice where you're speaking on things. I'm starting to write columns that are about kind of the overarching trends in the league. So it's like, what do I actually want to do? And how do I want to utilize the platform in a way that makes sense? So I'm like, I wanted to move closer to home. I wanted to have a new challenge. It got to the point where it was like my 5th year of being a beat reporter, and it kind of was clear to me that that's not really conducive to my skill set. Like, I like to write long form, I like to write short form, I like to write columns. So I just kind of started with where can I go to write columns and be closer to home. And I tried to work it out with The Athletic, and it was just kind of like I could stay in Carolina, I could go to LA, I could go to Tampa, and guess what? 3 years later, none of those places exist and those people got laid off. So I could kind of see the writing on the wall where they were trying to move to more hubs, move to more national. So I'm just like, you know what? Let me get ahead of that, get out of this contract and go home. Like, I kind of just wanted to go home and try my hand at freelancing when it came to writing about the whole league. And Bleacher Report's interesting where it kind of is less freelancing and more like, a contract. So I had that security.
I want to talk about, I think, we'll talk about the really incredible parts of it and the really difficult parts of managing this specific industry and this different type of career. And I want to start maybe with some of the more negative stuff, and then we'll build into the positives because there are so many incredible things that you can do with the flexibility and the opportunity that exists in sports. But let's talk about some of the turmoil that exists in the sports industry. We've spoken about like layoffs or, getting fired for being a liberal because that's a thing that happens. And just like different work culture and the heavy travel and all these different things. What are some of the parts of working in the sports industry, specifically in journalism, that you found to be difficult and maybe some ways that you've kind of overcome them or managed them in a better way than maybe when you first started?
Yeah. Oh my God. I think the job specifically, there's like two, it's like being a reporter and facing backlash. And then there's like the job, the layoffs, work culture, heavy travel, things like that. I think just knowing that there's kind of periods of your life where it's going to be different and you can always kind of change. And like, I think that freelancing really helped during this time where people are getting laid off because you're not going to get fired. Like you don't have health, you have your own healthcare, you have your own kind of, you're your own boss. So unless you fire yourself, that's kind of not going to happen. So I think there's been a bit of relief in this tumultuous time for sports journalism, knowing that like, okay, that's a weird type of security, but also just kind of, I don't know, like it's funny because these issues still just exist and you have to try to navigate them every day and they're ever changing. But I think it's like if one thing is bothering you this week, it might not bother you next week.
How do you find the opportunities that exist in those sorts of areas? Because I think especially when people are starting freelancing, I think it is something that, like we mentioned, the flexibility, that's a word that keeps coming up. So if you're maybe in school or if you're already working a 9 to 5 and you're thinking of dabbling in other career options and you want to try something that's a little bit less of a full commitment and stuff like that, it can be hard to find opportunities. And I think obviously at the stage that you're at in your career right now, opportunities come to you more than they probably did back when you were
Yeah.
starting. But how do you kind of navigate finding the right opportunities? And there are so many things out there that people don't even no exist, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'd say don't be afraid to take like a smaller niche sport or like a niche newspaper for like getting your reps in and getting noticed because I don't know, I'm in a really interesting spot with freelancing where I already had like a really big platform before. Or not a really big, but like compared to most people who start out freelancing, it's like I built my platform before I decided to go the way of freelancing. So it's kind of like if you're in my position, it's like you keep saying you're available and trying kind of new different things and like telling people, I know I was that. People still paint me as like a beat reporter for some reason, but I'm not that and I'm open to be other things. I'm open to trying radio, TV, whatever, like just putting yourself out there and every few weeks showing people, like promoting yourself. And I know it's uncomfortable, but like just reminding people you exist, reminding people that you're open to X, Y, and Z, and just kind of being open to things you wouldn't expect to be open to if you're like, because it's the thing is, it's non-committal. Like, it's not, you can try something and decide you don't like it.
I think it's really typical in this industry, specifically for women, when you're looking at new opportunities, you want to take on opportunities that you feel ready to tackle. You know, a lot of people are really scared of maybe covering a team that they're less familiar with, and maybe covering a sport that they're less familiar with, because you want to feel like an expert on something, because we know how people act when you receive backlash on Twitter, like almost nobody else I've seen, because people are uncomfortable when, you know, women are strong and sure of themselves and what they know. And when you find yourselves in situations where you aren't always sure in that same way, like I can speak from experience, it can be really, really intimidating. If someone starts asking me a question that bleeds into a team that I maybe only watch 20 other games in a season, I start getting really uncomfortable. And how do you manage, you know, having the confidence to try new things when you're not feeling super confident in your existing ability to cover that thing?
That's actually a great question. I think it's fun. Like, I think you have to embrace it. Like, I make goals for myself to fail at something 5 times because it means you're trying something new. And that there have been times where I felt so stuck. And the answer is actually trying something new and not being afraid to fail and knowing you can kind of fall back. But it is hard because if you fail on hit on something, it's like, well, damn, or like the pressure's on as a freelancer, like I can't lose that source of income. So it is hard. I'm not, but it's putting your work in it, like putting the hours in so you know you did the absolute best that you could and that like you learned you don't have to ask what if about that thing anymore. Like, oh, like for instance, the hosting stuff, I thought for sure I was going to be bad at it. And I even think it's a matter of getting reps in and kind of humbling yourself and thinking, okay, I got so used to writing certain articles that it's like you can kind of do it a few hours before they're due. With hosting, I've taken a week to sit down, watch these games, watch the replay, think about who I'm interviewing, and think about watch people that I admire doing the thing. I think that's a really good example of like read more, look at people that you admire and study their film.
It can definitely be scary to fail. I totally know what you mean, that there's so many learnings that come from it. But people, I feel like, especially in this industry, they're afraid to fail in public. Because I think that's a really, really scary thing to do is, you know, have whether you have a following or you're trying to grow a following, and if you fail and those people can see that, I feel like that's a really scary thing to think about. How do you manage kind of, obviously not every quote unquote failure is done in public or something that people necessarily know about. I fail behind closed doors every single day. I totally get that. But how do you kind of manage that kind of overwhelmingness of not wanting people to think that you're a failure?
I think there's some humility in the fact you're a human. You're not going to be perfect. You're writing thousands of words a week. I think if somebody points out a mistake in my article, it's really important for me. If it's a mistake, if it's not an opinion difference, if it's a mistake, I got a word wrong, I got a fact wrong, it's important to acknowledge that publicly, not crash out about it, but say, thank you for telling me there was a mistake. Wow, I didn't catch that one. Like, I'm gonna go back and edit the article. Like, I think it's okay to acknowledge you're a human and you made a mistake, but to not make it the end of the world or like cry about it. I think also knowing that people call me out harsher on things that aren't mistakes, that are whatever opinions or just being a woman or just being something that they don't like. So I think knowing that they're gonna call you out no matter what and that you're gonna respond nicely to actual people calling you out because there's an actual mistake and they read your word. I think handling that and knowing that kind of people will forget about it, but I am not the best at handling getting called out publicly, and that's something that is definitely I still have to work on. But I don't know. It's like it's so hard when you go on these platforms, and there's so much going on the platforms, and they're kind of emphasizing controversial things.
Definitely. Yeah, I can only imagine. Especially as you grow through your career and you become a little bit more familiar with how different social media platforms work, how different people respond to things. You learn to manage things a little bit better. You've learned, I've learned, a lot of people have learned. But early in your career, I feel like it can be really difficult to decipher, like you said, good feedback versus noise versus trolls versus, like you said, people coming for you because you're a woman as opposed to what your actual take is and all those sorts of things. Do you have any like early tips or pieces of advice or anything that you followed when you were kind of trying to manage that? Because at a certain point, like basically every woman who is still existing in this industry develops a pretty thick skin. And
Yeah.
do you have any particular tips for how that thick skin is developed?
Like getting your reps in, first of all, I think like this is so tough because some weeks I feel like I do have thick skin, some weeks I don't. Like there's going to be a comment that bothers me. And I think just realizing that's okay that you're a human and that you should be a little bit nicer to yourself when you have a reaction to something like I know they want you to have a reaction, just ignore it or whatever, but it's okay that you were human and like people are actively trying to get you to have a reaction. So it's okay that you did. Like instead of sometimes it's really hard to ignore it and it doesn't mean you're a failure and it doesn't mean you did anything wrong. I think just realizing that like there are a lot of people out there that are like it's always somebody with no profile picture, with name, bunch of numbers that knows they're being really negative and to just try to do things in the real world in reality that are not those random people online that are rooting on your downfall.
I do want to get to the more positive aspects of this too, but I do think it's so important with anything that's can be uncomfortable conversations in hockey. It's so important to acknowledge some of the hardships and things that exist, but then also work to celebrate the good as well. So I think kind of the last one that's a little bit maybe more depressing on that side is I find that, you know, you hear all kinds of stories in the industry about how freelancing and all these different places, they can be a little bit, maybe predatory is the wrong word, but you know, they understand that sometimes work can be hard to come by in the sports industry, and they understand that layoffs happen, so sometimes they don't put as much thought and care into things because they know that these people are used to getting laid off and job security sucks, so why would I change it and stuff like that. How do you kind of manage sticking up for yourself and ensuring that, you know, you're being treated fairly and that these are the right opportunities for you in a space where there are so many, like we said, lower commitment things, or maybe you aren't doing as much research into them because you know it's not your full-time 9-to-5 da-da-da-da-da. How do you manage that and ensure that you're prioritizing your own self and your own well-being in the industry?
Yep, that's such a good question, and it's something I definitely have to navigate and learn, and everybody has a different thing, and I think asking people for advice is a great idea, but I also think when you are busting your ass to make like $50 an article and then taxes get taken out, that's not okay. It's not okay that people, like, I don't know, there have been companies that try to ask me to make like $50 an article when it's like going to the rink can be $50 in some cases. Like, I'm not doing that. I think it's standing your ground and not, they're like, oh, you can get a credential for this. No, like, I know who I am at this point. So I think the establishment there helps me, but I also think like there are people that are going to say, like, you're not going to make more money anywhere else. And that's not true. I think setting your rates and kind of every rate can be different for every reporter. But I think there are, I don't know, there are so many different, more vocal. Like, I know the Defector is one that has, you can do story by story, but they actually pay well. Bleacher Report pays well. I think trying to look at as many avenues as possible and seeing, like, what, never work for free. I would say that. I would say people offering you an opportunity, go do your own article for free on Substack. Go do your own on whatever platform by yourself. Like that, then you get to own that and that's yours.
And that's really good advice that kind of segues into kind of the more exciting parts of it. I want to talk a little bit about your Substack because I think that this is something that's really cool. And like you said, owning your own content, this is a theme that's kind of run its way through this season as well. And it's so important to not always necessarily own what you do. Obviously, there are so many great organizations out there that you can work for and everything. But finding a niche is a super, super, it can be difficult thing to do, but important thing to do, especially in the sports industry where you can really grow yourself outside of maybe a company or anything like that. Can you talk a little bit about the Civ Report and kind of how you decided that was something that you wanted to do, what part of it's been successful, and maybe if someone else was looking to kind of pursue a similar avenue of their owned freelancing, kind of what advice you would give?
Yeah, I just was kind of figuring out my plan for this year, and I'm like, if I like don't, I can't just sit around. Like, the whole fun of freelancing is you don't have to sit around and wait for something to happen, and I couldn't at this point. I'm like, I want to make jumps in my career and see what if. So I'm like, what's the worst that can happen, which I think is a really good attitude to have while freelancing. So I decided to start this. It's like once a week, it's a newsletter that I write about whatever's going on in the league. But sometimes it's a column about just people on the internet or whatever, or a different sport or something like that. And I have a chat room too, where I kind of try to, every time I'm getting annoyed with Twitter, I try to call it a place for people who like sports and don't suck, because Twitter brings me down. I'm not strong enough sometimes, like, to face the vitriol. And I realize that I'm getting harassed by 50 plus men every single day of my life, and it's okay to react to that. So I think avoiding it and staying offline for as much as possible is like staying offline off Twitter, like, can sometimes be healthy. And talking to people that are actually funny and bright and are not operating in bad faith and are not looking to misconstrue you. And this is like micro things that I just feel like tear at women. They feel gaslit into thinking, like, don't deserve to get mad about, right? Like, it's these micro moments where people are kind of just harshing your vibe and trying to do things to piss you off. It's like facing that every single day when you shouldn't have to, when somebody wouldn't walk on the street and talk to you, and you have to be like, ha ha, like that's just never been me on the street or in public, so I'm not gonna act like that. So it's been really nice to have like a few times a week. We watch the games together, and it's like, you know, you're not hostile in the environment. Because what happens to me on Twitter sometimes is like, you create an offense that's like a defense when you expect people to be really rude to you. And I don't want to walk around the world doing that. So it's been nice to kind of be able to tell jokes that people handle in good faith there. So it's been a really good, fun community. And yeah, I really just love the idea of kind of being able to speak my mind once a week. And it's been more lucrative than anything I've ever done freelancing, which was a huge shock. Like, I've made more money than even per month a full-time job. It's been crazy.
That's amazing and congratulations. And I think the point that you bring up about the Twitter interaction, all that sort of stuff, I think is so important. I'm of the mind that I understand where people are coming from when they often say they're like, oh, like just leave it alone, don't give them the attention, that's what they want. But I feel like that also sometimes operates under the guise that these people shouldn't be allowed to think that what they're doing is just okay, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, people are like, oh, just ignore it. It's like, actually, no, I think people deserve to be called out. Because, like you said, yeah, no one would say that to you on the street. And if someone did say that to me on the street, my goodness, would they hear it from me? So why should I act kind of
Yeah.
any differently online? And I don't think it's okay for people to think that they can just say whatever they want behind a screen. So I agree with you that there is definitely a level of balancing what you receive online, what you engage with online for the sake of your own mental health as well. Because yeah, if you were to go through and engage with every single one of those things, holy smokes, you would burn yourself out pretty quickly. But I think that is really, really important advice, and everyone
Yeah.
can tackle those situations differently, but it is important to give yourself the respect that you deserve. And if people are kind of trying to walk all over you and say horrible things to you, I think you should be allowed to stand up for yourself. But in terms of, you know, you mentioned earlier the whole idea of don't work for free. And I think that when people are starting out, sometimes that feels like it's the only option. And how would you say that managing if someone is, you know, trying to write for the very, very first time or trying to own their content? Because maybe if they're posting stuff on Twitter, LinkedIn, a Substack, something like a newsletter, they might not be receiving any payment, but at least they're doing it for themselves and stuff like that. How do you manage the early phases of monetization?
I would say, okay, first, it's hard because it's an atmosphere like this changes like every 5 years, and now it's changing at light speed. But I would say get an internship with a respected company if you can. Like, first, make reels. If like if you're starting out where you don't have a background at school, then that's a little more difficult for me because that's what was my avenue. And it's like you get an internship, you get reps in at like the sports blog at your school or whatever it is. I'd recommend doing all that. And that's like the free work where you're still learning. But an internship or like an understudy with somebody that is in the industry that, like, I know where you work, it's like there's a lot of great established people that are willing to help you out a little bit. I think if I remember correctly, and if
Oh,
I
yeah.
like know the people there, like I know they're great. I think asking them, because it can be so localized, and figuring out exactly kind of what you want to do and like where you want to be, like targeting certain companies and seeing, okay, is there an internship here? Because I think that's a good track. Like, because you there will be times where if you're young starting out, maybe you have to establish yourself with kind of credibility or with some like good samples. So I think that's a good place to start.
Do you have any recommendations for building up a portfolio? I think that's something that, I don't know, again, I didn't go to journalism school, so I think you and I can speak to early career stages from very, very different angles. But when it comes to building a portfolio, I feel like that's something that there isn't a lot of, you know, hard and fast rules about, and everyone builds them up a bit differently. They host them on different platforms. They choose to share them differently and stuff. Do you have any portfolio tips for people who may be looking to kind of gather some work or maybe even create some work that they don't have right now and they build it specifically as a portfolio piece?
Yeah, I think what's awesome about something like Substack is that people, like established journalists, will want to help you out. There's one that I n don't know that I reached out to, and I was like, hey, I really love your work and I want to do like an interview with you. And he was like, I really su like support you going on your own way like this. So I think even doing interviews with people in the industry or interviews with people as kind of like a your own entity and putting them for free. Like that's a good, you can think about it like a portfolio, like having work as if you were already in the industry, and maybe having multiple types, like a column, a feature, a Q&A, a gamer, like whatever you want it to, like I guess people don't even do gamers anymore, but like a post-game column, a post-practice, a newser, I'd say. Like your ability to do breaking news, things like that, just kind of establish yourself if you don't have the background or like the established news station you're working for. I'd say like write as if you kind of do and put together several different things.
I think when you're starting out in this particular career, there are sort of more hard skill directions you can go and soft skill directions that you can go, and having that portfolio of work built up is so crucial. But also building a reputation and networking is super important as well to try and get connected with the right people. And like you mentioned, talking to journalists and stuff like that. Do you have any particular tips or advice for people to when it comes to networking? Because that's one that, you hear from a lot of really established professionals. They're like, please stop DMing me when I've never met you before and say that you'd like to meet up for coffee. Like, let's try and have a bit of a conversation first and all those types of things. Do you have any advice for managing networking and trying to build a positive reputation kind of everywhere you go? Because you never know what's going to come back and be something really helpful for you. So you want to make sure you're carrying yourself with the best reputation that you possibly can at all times.
Yeah, I'd say follow me. Like you'd be surprised at the amount of people that like reach out that don't follow me. I can see that on the button. I'm like, I don't know like what, I don't know. That would be the number one, but I would also say be genuine. Not that you have to like, here's why I like your work or whatever, but like you don't have to flatter me. I don't know, but it's just like don't, I see a lot of people treat it like LinkedIn. This profession isn't like that. People are worn thin and really busy, especially women, and especially women online. It's like some days you're not gonna check your DMs because of the harassment, whatever it is. But I would say don't mass reach out to people. Reach out to like five people that you genuinely love their work. Say their work means a lot to you because of XYZ, and that like you'd love to follow in their footsteps if there's kind of like any advice, or if there's like, yeah, things like that. I'd say just like make sure you're genuinely reaching out. Like, I think even interacting with them online and like interacting with their work, like reading their work, subscribing to their work, and commenting on it there, and being like creating a rapport in that way where it's like long before you're reaching out for help, it's kind of like, get your work, and I really and passionate about reading it and kind of following in your footsteps.
I think that's a really good kind of action. I know for some people it's like, oh yeah, like if I've asked for advice for people, sometimes they'll be like, oh, like just make sure you're kind and you're polite and stuff like that. But that's a really good tangible action I think that people can look at is, yeah, like before you reach out and ask for something, develop kind of a relationship from a consumer end. Like you said, consume
Yeah.
their work, engage with their work. I think that's a really meaningful way to connect with someone, and it's easy to start, right? I think that's always what's hard with so many different things is that you can feel like it can be intimidating to start. Quote tweeting an article and saying, "Great read, check it out," is basically the easiest thing that you can do. So
Yeah.
I think that that's a really good kind of piece of advice. When it comes to freelancing, a lot of people who do different projects, take on different ventures and stuff like that, do several at once. And it's a little bit different than, a workplace where you are only doing one job, where they understand that if, you have holidays booked, that for the first couple of days that you come back, your meeting schedules might be a little bit goofy. And, that if there's XYZ thing going on at this particular workplace at this time, that everyone's schedule might be shifting a little bit and all those sorts of things. You don't really have that same, I don't know if the word I'm looking for is like relationship or intimacy with the company when you have to manage all of your own deadlines, you have to manage all the different expectations that are being put on you. Do you have any tips for kind of juggling all of that and keeping yourself disciplined, keeping yourself on task and scheduled?
Actually, so true, and that was the hardest thing about freelancing for me. It's like I joke that like you're not your own boss, you have like three or four bosses, and it's like they all are kind of expecting you to be like your own editor to some degree. Like it really is. It took a long time for me to figure out my groove, but I think it's just really, really planning out your weeks, planning out your days off and enjoying those, but also holding yourself accountable with your own schedule. And like, it's your, again, like seeing things as an opportunity. Like, if they aren't doing your story idea, it's like, or like if they aren't giving you a story idea, it's your opportunity to write about something, which makes it harder. But if you're, this could be your last, you could get a full-time job and that's not your journey anymore. Like, cherishing kind of the good things about it. And also, I didn't realize how hard it would be to manage pitches and story ideas versus the actual writing, like the cadence of figuring all that shit out. Because, like, there have been pitches that I've done where it's like you put the pitch in and then the story's over because you were like a day late. So it's like it's already the news is broken. So that's the beauty of Substack, that I can write any breaking news that I want. I can write any intel, which, like, that's magical. But it's really frustrating to have to go, especially with ADHD. It's like, oh my God, the pitching process. I'm so grateful for Bleacher Report to have like a more structured thing, but like I was losing my mind trying to write for a few other companies. So I realized, all right, I'm gonna do podcasting and hosting content for other companies and Bleacher Report writing. I cannot handle writing two places at a time. Maybe others can, but that was like my thing. It's figuring out what you can actually do and what you want to do to keep going. Cause like there's burnout too, where you don't have holidays off. You have to write whenever you have to write, you don't get sick days. So it's like figuring that out and having, like, I saw somebody, it's like funny. This is the best advice that I never take because I really am bad at this, but it's like Thursday is her pitching day and Monday is her writing day. Monday and Wednesday are writing days or whatever, like more multiple times a week, her writing days. But like, there's a specific day for pitching, so you don't get lost in the fact that you need to do that to keep having a career.
Do you find that you've learned a lot about yourself over the course of kind of shifting towards freelancing in terms of, like you said, what you can manage and what you enjoy and what's maybe harder for you than you thought, what's maybe something you're really good at? Like, do you find that it's been like a very like self-reflective kind of transition and journey for you?
Definitely, definitely. I found that it's like, when I create my own structure, I learn actually what articles I actually am the best at writing, which bring me the most joy, and which, and that it's okay to mail things in. Not okay, it's not okay to mail things in, but it's okay to not write the best article of your life when you need to write something 3 times a week to keep a job. Like, it's finding which of those moments you actually want to write the best article of your life and that you can actually do it. Like, you can handle kind of all this stuff if you really do it, like you figure it out. And it's also just the social media aspect, like when you don't have colleagues kind of forced to retweet your stuff, like, okay, how am I gonna make this in a way that gets the attention of people and gets, like with Substack, it's like, all right, I'm my own manager with social media. Like, okay, if I go viral for something really stupid, which happens every 3 days now, you put the Substack next to it. If somebody hates you, you use it as an opportunity to dunk on them with a Substack link. Like, you really just, like, you learn that you're kind of good at marketing if you want it to be, or that like it's all kind of under your control.
I will be the first person to say that I dislike the whole concept of like people being like, well, I need to put myself first. And you know, I feel like oftentimes most people who live that as a public mantra probably don't need to be putting themselves first any more than they already are and stuff. But I think in this specific industry, it is so important to set boundaries for yourself and to ensure that you're not getting burnt out, to ensure that you're not getting exploited, because that is definitely a possibility in these industries where there are different places that, like you said, pay per click and all those sorts of things, and you can really, really burn yourself out for such little return and stuff. How do you set your own personal boundaries, and how do you kind of keep yourself kind of at the forefront and prioritize your own longevity in the space?
I know, that's a great question. I think, I know, it really changes, and it's something that it's the biggest struggle of doing this. But I think being, I like am so lucky to have an editor at Bleacher Report that hears me out and will change like my schedule of writing, where it's like usually it's Wednesday and Friday, but if I need it to be like Tuesday and Thursday or whatever, I can kind of communicate that with him. Or just kind of knowing when you're preaching, like approaching a burnout and being like, damn, I gotta kind of buckle down and get some sleep and like kind of do things that like focus on myself, not getting wrapped up in the internet stuff. And sometimes I even will go through periods where I'm not even like tweeting my article out. It's just kind of like, okay, I got the article done. Like, that's kind of what the job is, focusing back in on like the bare bones of the job.
What's been your favorite part of the whole of transitioning to freelancing? Because I think it is such a great way to try different things, like we mentioned earlier in the episode, and maybe get a little bit more say into your schedule and stuff like that. Like, what's been just your favorite part of this whole thing?
That I could do it, that I it's about people support. The support that I've got on this Substack, it's like it gives me so much confidence to kind of write about what I want and be political and say what I want and know that people are supporting me. And it's not this one person I considered a mentor back in the day. He had a meeting with me because of my social media, it gets out of control because partially it is like me being outspoken, but it's also there are like hit campaigns on me. Like, it's so ridiculous. I'm just like a hockey writer that said like I don't like Donald Trump, who is evil. Like, it's okay to say that, but you like this was years ago, and he came to me and he said, "You are so great on social media, and it gives your article, every article you write has more engagement than anybody else at the company. Anybody else, it doesn't matter, but you're right here, and I need you to be right there." And I'm like, that was so hurtful because it's not, first of all, it's not possible. Like, you can't, it has to be like full frontal what it is, or it has to be me having rules and regulations against my own social media use, right? So I just like was hurt by that. And now, for better or for worse, sometimes it is for worse, but I don't have to do that. Like, I am self-sustaining on being exactly who I am. And some of it comes with backlash, but it is like not financial backlash, I'll tell you that. And I think just it's been great to not feel like I'm the problem child somewhere. Like, I am my own problem child, if anything, and that I have the freedom to kind of do stuff.
It's been so fun following kind of your journey for the last few years. I started following you on social media when you were still at the Athletics. So that's a little bit of time ago now, and it's been really cool to watch you kind of make this transition, the new projects that you promote and that you work on, and you know, anything to do with player outfits and stuff like that. It's always been a pleasure to engage with your work. To finish off this episode, can you leave us all with kind of one piece of advice if someone is kind of in the midst of a freelancing journey right now and they're feeling a little bit defeated and dejected and they feel like they don't see a bright future for themselves? If someone is looking to start out and they're feeling maybe like they're not sure if it's for them, what's some advice that you have for people who are kind of navigating the freelancing space, whether it's writing, content, anything like that in the hockey industry right now or soon?
Yeah, what I was struggling with last year was waiting for kind of the next thing around the corner. Then I felt like I had to be so patient for it. And I wanted, I being like wanting to try something else and that not happening yet. But like, it's always right around the corner if you keep working hard. And sometimes that corner is like very, very, it's way too far away from what you deserve. But it's not about you or your work. It's kind of about the state the industry is in and a matter of keeping to put yourself out there, keeping talking to the right people, doing whatever it is, but like just keeping trying. But I have definitely had low moments. Like last year, I wanted to, being prepared for an opportunity and not getting it is kind of frustrating. But then you realize, oh, something like Substack happens and you can try it on your own and put yourself out there until maybe something else happens.
I think that's a really good, optimistic, and hardworking take to kind of finish this off with. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me for this episode today. This has been a really fun conversation. I do a lot of freelancing work, and it's been really cool. I think there's a lot of advice that I can take away from this as well. So thank you for, you know, being here for this, for me, for everyone listening. We appreciate your time. Folks, if you're listening in, make sure you hit the thumbs up on your way out. If you're watching on YouTube, follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. I guess that's a subscription, but besides the point, and all that fun stuff, because we have a lot of episodes still to come in this season. Sarah, thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you all next time.